For me, Paris is the capital of Europe. It's home to the grandest boulevards, the biggest palace, and some of the greatest museums. But amid all that grandeur are neighborhoods with parks, gardens, and beloved squares. Sure, you gotta see the big sights, but the personality of Paris is found in its intimate spaces, the spaces where people gather, where life of the city is celebrated. Susan Cahill is the author of The Hidden Gardens of Paris, and she joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves for a neighborhood-by-neighborhood journey into some of the city's hidden pleasures and the stories that come with them. Susan, bonjour.
Bonjour, Rick.
What fun to have a focus on Paris that is the greenery, the beautiful people spots, the gardens. How do you know Paris so well, first of all?
Well, my son lives in Paris with his lovely wife and beautiful daughter, who was born there, and I've been visiting. She's now 15, and I have gone 3 or 4 times a year at least, and I've stayed there for a month at a time. So I spent a lot of time walking from, just looking for them.
Paris is a great city for walking, and I love to encourage people just to, you know, you got to see your major sites, of course, but
right.
Spend time, actually plot out time to just wander with a spirit of sort of curiosity to venture into little nooks and crannies. You really find some beautiful spots.
Oh, I know.
Tell us a moment when you were just wandering and you stumbled onto a wonderful, delightful little garden that nobody knows about.
It may be my favorite, but I hate to talk favorites because they're all my favorite. But I was wandering around 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. The garden that goes with the École Normale Supérieure, the ENS garden, where all the brilliant young students go.
ENS.
ENS. École Normale Supérieure. But it's the student's garden, and it's open to the public without any checking of anything on Sunday mornings.
Okay, and what was so special about it?
Beautiful big trees, but the slant of the boughs is almost like it's prearranged. And under these trees, there are tables for two, chairs for two. And the morning I was there, there were students just sitting there chatting with one another. There was a beautiful fountain in the center. And of course, the sound of a fountain is magical. And then it's surrounded by tall walls, and in those walls are set sculptured heads of the great geniuses of the ENS. The sculpture is very good, but the representation of geniuses is overwhelming.
So you found a beautiful natural setting where you caught a slice of the people of Paris by surprise in a candid moment. You know, one beautiful experience I had was stumbling onto a Roman theater. I bet you know the park I'm thinking of.
Yes, Lutèce.
Arendae,
yeah. Lutèce.
Describe that, because I just couldn't believe what a tucked away gem that was, and I had never heard of it.
Right, and it was very hard to find, because I had heard of it, but I couldn't find it. But it looks like a Greek or Roman theater. It has the same, you know, arrangement of seats going up high on a slant. And then in the middle is the sandy ground where the sports happen. And, you know, if you've been to Rome, you can see that, only it's on a much smaller scale. But it's very clean. It's very empty. Now little kids ride their bikes around it. But it is truly a Roman space.
So that's the Arena de Lutèce.
Lutèce, L-U-T-E-C-E.
That's right. And you can, it's not that far off the Seine on the left bank.
Right.
And arena is actually, I believe, the Latin word for sand, and it's still got the sand there. What an amazing little, an encouragement to adventure.
Right. We just sat there just in wonder, knowing that this was a Roman construction. And they called Paris Lutetia. Cara Lutetia,
right.
Dear beloved Lutetia.
So that's a reminder that 2,000 years ago, there was a Roman Paris. And of course, the city was born on the island in the middle of the Seine, the Île de la Cité.
Right.
And on that island, you talk in your book about a beautiful little square, which is actually a triangle.
You're talking about
the square
Vert-Galant. That's named after Henry IV, their beloved king, who's up on the Pont Neuf, just above this little park, on his horse, because he was the king that they all loved the most, though they claim they liked Charlemagne, but Charlemagne was short and fat and couldn't read. So that was just something that a historian made up. They loved Henry IV. He was tolerant. And they built this little tiny triangular park in his memory. And it's so sweet and
this
intimate.
Is so sweet.
Yeah.
And it's in the shadow of the Supreme Court of France. I mean, it's surrounded by all these overwhelming buildings. And then here you have the quintessence of charming Paris. The old guys are playing pétanque, and you got the green benches and the children running after their dogs. And it's just a delightful little break from the intensity
of
the
city. You can't believe that here we are in the center of the greatest city in the world. It's just enchanting.
And you can actually sit at the very tip and dangle your feet over the embankment. And the little picnic zones all around the islands are very nice. But I love, in particular, being right on the tip there, just in front of the Henry IV statue.
And there's a wonderful cafe there, if you'd prefer to go inside. Henry IV Tavern. It's right there opposite his statue. And Parisians say it's the nicest wine bar in the city. And I don't know, because I haven't been in all of them, but this one is really special.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're taking a moment to appreciate the hidden gardens of Paris right now with Susan Cahill. Her book is called The Hidden Gardens of Paris, and we're exploring Paris and finding ways to bring out the intimate side of the city. Susan, there's so many parks that you talk about in your books, and one thing a lot of us forget is there are parks associated with museums and galleries, and perhaps my favorite would be the park at Musée Rodin, right? That was his home, and it's surrounded by a little park with a wonderful cafeteria.
Yes.
Tell us about
yes.
the garden at Musée Rodin.
Well, some of his sculpture is situated throughout the garden, especially
you got the thinker.
The thinker is
right
the one
there.
That comes to mind right now, and behind that is the dome of Les Invalides. It's it's just magical to stand there.
Yes.
And the little cafe is delightful. And again, it's never screaming or crowded or it's just, very accessible.
So you stroll through this garden, you've just had your coffee there in the cafe, and you marvel at how the sun dapples and plays with the very beautiful statues of Rodin, the greatest sculptor in Europe since Michelangelo. And it's all right there. It's just a stone's throw away from Napoleon's tomb at Les Invalides.
Oui.
Oui. another highlight for me is the Promenade Plantée.
Oh,
Tell us about that.
I mean, oh, I'm glad
if you know the New York City High Line,
right.
I mean, it's kind of like the High Line, isn't it?
Oh, I love the Paris Promenade much more. It's shorter. It's narrower. The people have better manners. Now I'm going to sound like an old bag, but
No, it's
I'm
true, but just so our listeners can understand, this is an abandoned viaduct that's been elevated. It's a train line that runs above the streets. It's about 3 miles long.
Right.
And it's a beautiful walk. If you want to, well, when I'm in New York City, I love to do the High Line. It's the same sort of joy in Paris, but like you said, it is French culture. You've got a peek into condos. It's sort of like Better Homes and Gardens sort of in person when you look into all of the condos,
right.
The fine landscaping, the joggers. You really feel like a temporary Parisian.
Yeah, and nobody acts irritated with you. And it's so comforting to walk that thing. I live in a very noisy, rude city, which I love. But still, it's not like Paris.
One of the most interesting parks to me is, I don't know if you can call a cemetery a park, but a cemetery is a park to me, and it's filled with permanent Parisians. The most famous cemetery in Paris is Père Lachaise.
Yes.
What would you recommend about Père Lachaise? How does that grab a travel?
Well, it's a place that's haunting because almost every headstone has a name on it of an artist or someone who has just stirred your soul and meant something to you in your own life. Poulenc is there. Colette is there.
Chopin is there.
Yes, and Berlioz.
Jim Morrison. Right. Jim Morrison of the Doors.
Right. And that always has people around it, always. But it's very stirring because it's as if, the history of Paris is gathered there, and yes, in the form of ashes, but still.
And you can follow a map, and you can go from Chopin to Jim Morrison to Edith Piaf, and you can learn a lot about Paris, and they're all right there, and they never move.
Exactly. That's true.
Well, speaking of dead Parisians, let's talk about live Parisians. And if you're looking for life in sort of a park, I think there's a temporary park they set up every summer along the banks of the river, isn't there?
Yes, the plage.
The Periplage, the beach of Paris.
Right. It's gotten very overcrowded now. But I was very happy to find it because it sounds like a great idea. But it can't be too crowded or it's not so great.
It's quite a scene.
Yeah.
It's quite a,
it's a scene.
It's sort of a trendy scene.
Right.
Yeah. One thing I like to do is rent a bike. Paris has this great bike program where for just a pittance, you can pick up a bike at one of those racks.
Right.
Or you can rent a bike at a bike rental place. And with the bike, you can go right along the river.
That's
on
right.
The bank.
My family uses bikes. They don't have a car. And their little girl learned how to bike when she was about 6 in Paris.
Do you take your granddaughter to a park?
I don't.
Do you do? You don't?
Well, I mean, not on a bike. No, I don't take her.
No. But I'm thinking what I would like to do if I was a grandpa in Paris is take my grandchild to the Tuileries
and rent
one of those little sailboats that you push around with a stick
so
in the pond. Isn't that a classic scene?
Absolutely. They have a lot of stuff for kids there. They have puppet shows and several trampolines. And you'd think, you know, in America, mothers would be, where's your helmet? Where's your helmet? They don't do that, you know? They just enjoy themselves.
Susan, you've been in enough parks to know that Paris has a strange approach to grass. Are you supposed to sit on it, or are you supposed to look at it? I really can't figure that out.
I just stay off it because the signs say stay off the grass. And for the most part, the people respect that.
Do you know what the definition of a split second is in Paris?
No.
It's the time it takes between when you step on the grass and a policeman blows his whistle.
That's a good one because it's true.
It's crazy.
They don't
miss a beat. You sit on those green folding chairs and you settle into the gravel and you look at the greenery. There's a few parks where the grass is part of the joy, but for mostly you look at it and they're gorgeous parks like Luxembourg Gardens. That's one of my favorite gardens.
Yes, that's beautiful. And those statues around the pool, those are the great women of Paris who are usually ignored. You don't hear too much about them. But the busts are just lovely. And the one in particular, Laura Dunois, she was the woman that de Sade loved, and she wouldn't look in his direction. So I always got a kick out of that one. She's so graceful and sweet and ideal, and he adored her.
Paris is the kind of city that's at its best when you just start walking around. We're taking a moment to locate and appreciate the Hidden Gardens of Paris right now on Travel with Rick Steves. That's the title of Susan Cahill's book, which started her series of Paris guides. Susan's also written The Streets of Paris to help us follow in the footsteps of famous Parisians throughout history, and Sacred Paris as a guide to the city's most important religious buildings. We have more with this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. Susan, I think the challenge for our travelers is to see the big famous sites, but make space for the serendipity. And you find the serendipity in the parks. For instance, the Place des Vosges. I know that's a chapter in your book. It's a beautiful square that is a sort of a neighborhood living room. And one of my favorite moments in any park is to sit there next to the mothers and the fathers with their children playing in that sandbox. The kids are in the sandbox. You got a statue of the king behind you. You're surrounded by all this great Mansart roofs and classic Parisian architecture. And you really feel like this is a city that is a collection of neighborhoods.
Yes.
Tell me a moment in a park where you felt like this is the pithy essence of Paris.
Well, that is one. And some of these places are hard to find. I wouldn't have known. Vallée Suisse, it's on the cover of Hidden Gardens of Paris. You go down these stone curving steps and you get to the bottom and it's waterfalls and pools and the most gorgeous rhododendron and trees and sunlight. And there was just a woman sitting by herself, but she was obviously having her own private moment. I did not interfere. But it was a very private, that's another thing about Paris. It's very possible to find solitude. You wouldn't think that would be the case. It's a big city, lots of people. But you do have access to, you know, your own private moments.
And that's probably why parks are so beloved in Paris.
Yes.
Because it's an intense, congested city. It's a high-energy place. And people, just human beings, need that tranquility. And we can find that tranquility. Susan Cahill, thanks for joining us, and thanks for writing Hidden Gardens of Paris.
Thank you, Rick.
Juste quelqu'un de bien. bien, le cœur à portée de main. Juste quelqu'un de bien, sans grand destin. Un ami à qui l'on tient. Juste quelqu'un de bien, quelqu'un de bien.
There's more about Susan Cahill's specialized guides to Paris, as well as her literary travel guides to Ireland and Rome, and the anthologies of women writers that Susan has assembled. It's on her website, susancahill.net, and that's C-A-H-I-L-L. A few years ago, on a return visit from her new home in Paris, Mary Campbell Barone shared how she found that her fellow Parisians were looking out for her when they noticed she was expecting her first child. In fact, Mary eventually realized that some of the things that might seem like rude or odd behavior in America actually reflected what the French social fabric was about. Mary reminded us that being glared at in Paris is not necessarily something meant to offend you. Glaring is caring.
Yes.
Glaring, because people do glare caring. In Paris.
They really do. And it's usually coming from a place of concern. For example, I was in a cafe once with an American friend, and it was kind of happy hour, apéro time. So we were all ordering wine and beer, and this person was really, what they really wanted was a coffee with a bunch of milk in it and a lemonade. So they ordered a café au lait, which is not something you drink in the afternoon in France, and a lemonade. And the waiter looked at me and just gave me the strangest look, like, what? Are you sure? And I was like, give the guy what he wants. And he just glared at my friend, went over to the bar, told his coworker, then his coworker glared at my friend. And my friend turned to me and said, what have I done? Did I not pronounce it right? What have I done wrong here? I ordered two drinks. You think they'd be excited? And I told him, he's just worried for your digestion. All that milk and all that acidity in one sitting, he thinks you're going to have a terrible stomach ache later, and that's why he's looking at you with concern.
Glaring is caring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the United States, we've got our wonderful, the bubble of privacy that our car gives us. When we're tooling around in our cars, we can just, you know, do whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's like you're invisible.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you're almost got that bubble of invisibility on the streets of Paris without a car.
You really do. Well, sidewalks sort of work like roads anyway, so you stick to your lane, they've got their lane, you're moving fast, and you kind of have a closedness. You're running into so many different people everywhere. You kind of have a protective bubble around you to keep you sort of from getting overstimulated, but at the same time, it sort of creates this false privacy. So there's a lot of nose picking that goes on, a lot of staring, and you kind of forget that they can see you.
But you recommend in your blog to actually give it a try.
Yeah.
Go stare at people.
Go stare at people. And they'll stare right back. Don't stare and smile. Okay?
Right.
Staring and smiling.
Stare as if
is
you're looking
of,
through a one-way mirror.
Yes. Staring and smiling is an invitation to sort of like, hey, you want to come talk to me?
Right.
And you know, maybe you do, but
just
probably
stare,
not. Just
I like that one-way mirror sort of feeling.
One-way mirror.
You stare at somebody through a one-way mirror, you don't really care how you look. Yeah. You've got a free chance to stare at them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's not mean. It's or you don't, you know, it's just looking.
I'll try that next time. Best wishes, Mary.
Thanks, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.